and remind me again about how the two of you are over here to make my life easier?
Lucian started it. The old sheriff looked at me. And how the hell did I do that? You called them assholes. Just introducing myself. And I'm not the one who went over there and attempted to single-handedly take on Marathon Oil's second shift. I adjusted my hat, held the bag of ice Haji had given me against the swelling on my head, and addressed Sandy. How's Lorea?
We disarmed her and cut her loose.
He looked over his shoulder at the big guy, now seated in the back of a Campbell County cruiser and being ministered to.
Tam, did you see the staple in that guy's head? I mean, that was one of those big industrial jobs.
I think she wanted the thought to stick.
One of my deputies is trying to pry it out with a Spyderco knife.
He smiled.
The guy's got some priors, a battery and a few controlled substance abuses. You want to press charges?
No.
Well, he does.
On me?
No, on her. But I think I can dissuade him if you want.
He blew his breath out between his teeth.
I'm half of mine to let him have her and then send her butt back to Boise. She's been such a pain.
She's just concerned about her sister. He shook his head.
The stripper. The one that evidently packed up all her stuff into her car and drove off without telling anybody. The one that we haven't found any sign of foul play. The one that has a history of packing up her stuff and heading out for the road less traveled.
Just like Linda Schaffer and Roberta Payne.
He captured his lip with his teeth and then released it. Who?
I readjusted the ice pack on my head and stretched my jaw against the tightening there. Linda Schaffer vanished from the Kmart parking lot 7 months ago, and Roberta Payne disappeared from the Flying J truck stop 3 months ago. I studied him.
You didn't know about those women?
They were in Holman's reports?
Yes. He looked over his shoulder at the cruiser again.
I need to see them.
They're your reports. I waited a moment before continuing.
You really didn't know about them?
His hand brushed the brim of his hat.
Vaguely, but I rely on my men to tell me the things I need to know.
Why wouldn't Gerald Holman have told you about two missing persons cases?
I'm not saying he didn't, I just don't recall.
What about Richard Harvey? The sheriff of Campbell County inclined his head.
We don't talk much.
I nodded, but left it at that. I'll run the reports by tomorrow. I want one last look at them.
I'll make you some copies.
There's an idea.
Things had quieted down, and I had even made the effort of going over and saying hey to the oil refinery workers, especially the one with the multiple holes in his head. They'd gotten the staple out, and an EMT had him bandaged up. We shook hands, and I wondered about the nature of things as I stooped to pick up the scattered posters on the floor of the bar-slash-café. I stared at another photocopied version of Yona Urecha and wondered absently how many photographs her sister had of her. I crouched there by the booth and asked myself if my fixation on this particular young woman was irrational. The statistics said that all three women were most certainly dead, even though Yona was missing only 5 weeks. They say statistics by their nature don't lie, but in my opinion, they sometimes do, and damnably at that. Scooping up the posters, I stood and was confronted with Haji, who was also holding a collection of the copied sheets.
Hey, these slid over near the bar, and I think you want them.
I shuffled the papers and placed them under my arm.
Where are you from, Haji?
He smiled, the crooked smile.
Mumbai, just to the south.
You related to Rankaj Patel?
He is my father's brother.
Mind if I ask how you ended up here?
His face darkened as he stood the coat rack back upright, pushing it against the wall. I worked the summertime in Yellowstone Park and then found job here with my uncle for the winter. He studied me. All of my papers are in order.
I raised a hand in supplication. I'm sure they are. I was just curious.
He glanced around. With the oil and gas industry, no one wishes to work at bar job. I am of hopes to buy a motel self.
Buy a motel yourself?
Yes, in attempt of the American dream.
I started out the door, but he stopped me.
You
Are the sheriff?
Yep.
And the old man with you, he is sheriff too?
Yep. He nodded.
Lots of sheriffs in Wyoming.
I guess that's true as of late.
I reached a hand out and we shook and held on to his hand while percolating an idea.
Hey, you don't happen to play chess, do you, Haji?
He stared at me for a moment.
Why'd you ask that?
Well, it's where the game originally came from. He smiled.
The Gupta Empire in the northwest, in the 6th century. No one knows this.
He folded his arms in an attempt to look stately.
I am champion of the southwestern administrative province.
Do you have a board around here?
No.
I nodded, figuring I was in for another trip to the Kmart.
I'll get you one.
You wish to play?
No, not me. But if I get you a board, would you set it up and leave it there on the bar?
He looked at me strangely as I handed him my ice pack and exited the aces and eights. It was really getting cold out, but I knocked on the door of room 6 and waited. There was some noise inside, and she shuffled toward the door before finally speaking through the cheap wood.
Who is it?
Walt Longmire, the sheriff who just got his ass kicked. The door opened just a little, the chain still holding it secure, sort of. I held out the posters and slid them through the opening.
I thought you might want these.
She took them and then placed her face closer to the opening. I could see that she'd been crying.
They took my stapler.
Yep.
Well, you have to have a concealed-slash-carry permit for those things here in Wyoming.
She smiled.
I nailed him, didn't I?
Stapled him, to be exact.
Don't feel so bad about it. I did something like that in Vietnam once. I waited a moment. I've got to go back to Kmart tomorrow to pick up a chess set with which to distract my old boss, and I can pick you up another one. Smaller caliber, perhaps? She laughed again and tossed the posters behind her. There was an awkward silence.
Well, I just wanted to drop those off and make sure you were all right.
Thanks.
I started to turn, but heard her unhook the chain, and she opened the door a bit more. She was wearing a pair of blue nylon shorts and a Boise State t-shirt with the snorting pony on the front. In deference to the cold, she hugged herself to cover the protruding aspects of her anatomy and placed one foot over the other.
I mean it, thanks. Look, I'm kind of vulnerable right now, and I need a good word.
Excuse me?
Her head dropped, and the tears collected in her eyes.
I'm coming to the end of my rope, and I need something to hold on to, something to give me hope. Tell me you're going to find my sister.
Well, she sobbed.
Tell me you're going to find her alive.
Her face grew fierce and then slowly lost all emotion.
Please.
Usually capable of reading a dangerous situation, recent activity excluded, I stood there like a tower of crumbling stone, the only strong keystone in me, the two words I knew were the wrong ones to say.
I will.
She watched me to see if I was telling the truth, and then wiped her eyes with the back of a hand.
You want to come in?
I stood there, making sure I was hearing what I was hearing.
Thanks, but no. My head hurts and I'm pretty tired.
That's okay. It's an open invitation.
She stepped back in, closing the door behind her. As I stepped over to room 5, I noticed a handwritten note taped to the door that read, "You have been changed to room 4. The writing looked familiar, especially the emphasis on the period, which had stabbed a small hole in the paper, but I was too tired to analyze it, figuring Lucian and Dog had grown weary of my night owl tendencies and had given me the boot. It was just a few steps to number 4, I found it conveniently cracked open. I pushed the door the rest of the way in, but then, fumbling for the light switch, I had my right hand caught in a reverse wrist lock that turned me around and pulled me into the darkened room. A Browning tactical boot slammed the door closed behind us
as my assailant dragged me back under the bed, wrapped her legs around me, and bit my ear from behind, releasing it only long enough to whisper, "Good thing you fucking said no." Boy, howdy.
Chapter 5. Lucian sipped his coffee and smiled, watching the two of us talk like it was Wimbledon.
How was Belize?
I got a tan.
So I noticed.
The old sheriff choked, swallowed, and then interrupted.
Got any lines?
Victoria Moretti pushed a handful of blue-black hair back from her face and sipped her own coffee, sat the mug down, placed an elbow on the table, and leaned in, looking back at him with a full load of tarnished gold.
You want to try and find them, old man?
He blushed, and I believe it was the first time I'd ever seen him do it.
I don't know if my heart is up to it.
Maybe if you'd stop looking at my tits and look me in the face, you could work up the nerve.
She grinned at him, showing the elongated canine tooth.
Don't feel bad. Many are called, but few are chosen.
I didn't take you for a Sunday schooler.
She reached over and took a piece of my bacon, along with a little bit of my heart.
That's what the phrase is from, damned if I knew. I'm schooled in other stuff.
She bit into the bacon and narrowed the aperture of the cannons.
Why, you need a little teaching?
He cocked his head as he slid out of the booth the oil workers had occupied last night and glanced at me for a moment.
I think I'm going to go walk your dog.
Vic watched him slip on his coat.
Stay warm out there, thinking about me.
He pushed through the glass door and then stood still, frozen by her words for an instant.
I believe I'll do that.
I watched him head back for what had been our communal room and dog.
I think that's the first time I've ever seen him scamper.
I want to talk to you alone.
I figured.
She slid out and switched over to the other side and took another piece of my bacon, being, after all, a carnivore. As she chewed, I took the time to drink her in. She had gotten a tan, and the blonde streaks in her hair were incongruent in the depth of the Wyoming winter. A look I was more used to in the summer. Studying her was something you had to handle with care. Volatile, like nitroglycerin.
So, miss me?
Yep.
A lot?
Yep. She chewed and studied me.
Are you going to say something other than yep?
Yep. She waited, her eyes widening in comic expectation as I finally spoke.
How are you feeling?
I've got a great scar.
I know. I've seen it.
She nodded with a smile, staring at me in a way that made me think she hadn't had a really good look at me last night. Not a feeling I was comfortable with.
Don't you think scars make better stories than tattoos?
I fingered that little piece of my ear that was missing and draped an arm over the back of my seat. If that's the case, then I've got a whole library on me.
I've read it.
She continued, smiling and chewing.
And I really liked the ending.
She leaned back in the booth and looked out the fogged window of the Aces and Eights, a corpuscle-colored fingernail coming up and chipping at the frost, cornering the edges.
The windows in Belize don't do this. Shit, who am I kidding? They don't have windows in Belize.
A quiet spread out over the table between us like a blank page covered with abandoned plates, glasses, and cutlery, but no words.
You stay at Jim Seal's place?
She nodded.
Hotel Del Rio, yeah. He's from around here, right?
Banner over in Sheridan County.
You ever been to Belize?
Nope. I think he's had that place for 20 years. He keeps asking me down, but I just never get away. A smirk traced itself across her lips.
Look who I'm asking. You never go anywhere there isn't snow.
I've spent some time in tropic climes. She dismissed me with another flap of a hand.
The Vietnam War doesn't count.
I spent 6 weeks on Johnston Atoll. She stopped moving and then slowly turned her face toward mine.
After Vietnam?
Yep.
her eyes sharpened to flints. Okay, that's a month and a half of the two lost years unaccounted for after Vietnam and the saga that is the life of Walt Longmire. Where the hell is Johnson Atoll? I sipped my coffee, enjoying her full attention. 750 nautical miles west of Hawaii, on a coral reef platform. It's one of the United States' minor outlying islands, about 1.3 square miles. A postage stamp in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, with a single palm tree like you see in those cartoons in the New Yorker? Something like that. What, were you shipwrecked or something? No. She glanced around, enjoying the illusion of covert activity. What's there? I leaned back in my seat and studied her. An air base, a naval refueling depot, and a weapons testing area, but not any more. What kinds of weapons? Nuclear, among others. She leaned in. No shit? A dozen thermonuclear weapons were exploded there before the ban in 63, but they also had a 25-acre landfill full of Agent Orange, PCBs, PAHs, dioxins, and sarin nerve gas from East Germany. Sounds horrible. Nope. It was beautiful. Well, not the landfill so much, but the rest of it was an island paradise. What'd you do there? Swam, ate fish, fed the sharks, and sunbathed. Her head kicked to one side. For the government. You must have still been working for the military. Security, I shrugged. I was on medical leave from the Marines and still attached to the Air Force through the Provost Marshal. So they shipped me off to a quiet place for the rest of my tour.
Was it?
I blinked. What?
Quiet.
I thought about it. For a while. She wiggled on her seat.
Okay, let's hear about it.
Maybe some other time.
Come on.
I laced my hands behind my head. So how did Lena like Hotel Del Rio? She whined.
Come on.
I want to hear about your trip, not mine. I know how mine was, and it didn't end well. I glanced out the window at the snow, the ice, and the cold, which was seeping through the windows in an attempt to freeze us solid. I need a break from the winter. Tell me about the sand, the surf, and how you got your tan.
Okay, but this isn't over.
I sat there, not looking at her, and listened as she settled into her seat. Mom stayed for a week, but then got tired of watching me drink and went home. I turned back, and her eyes were now drawn to the frozen wasteland of the parking lot and the glaciers of snow piled against the building by the plows.
It was incredible. We had this cabana on the second floor where you could look at the ocean between the mangrove trees. The water was all shades of turquoise.
She sighed and closed her eyes.
After the stitches healed up, I'd go lie in the salt water at the end of the pier and just soak in the warmth.
I thought back about a conversation I had had with her uncle Alphonse and his description of the teenage Vic who, walking down Christian Street in a one-piece bathing suit, had enticed most of the men back in their native Philadelphia onto the stoops when she'd sauntered by. Sounds pretty great. Her eyes remained closed.
These guys would come by with conch fritters and cashews, so you didn't even have to get up for lunch. Just roll over and hand them some of that Belizean monopoly money.
And drink. Her eyes opened with an ore wagon full of tarnished gold.
You weren't around, and most people bore the shit out of me, so don't make it an issue.
Right.
I got enough of that crap from my mother.
Right.
I dove the Great Blue Hole.
I was surprised by the revelation. You scuba dive? After a brief warning look, the eyes closed again.
They have this beer, Belican, that comes in these really heavy, recyclable bottles. I did my part.
Her head cocked to one side.
There was a little place about a quarter mile down the beach in San Pedro, the Sandbar, best pizza south of South Street. And I'd go down there in the evenings and eat and drink. Sometimes I'd have Mai Tais, but mostly I drank the beer.
Her eyes opened, and she reached down, gathering our plates and stacking them at the end of the table
where Haji could retrieve them. I'd get toasted, and then Brittany and David, the owners, would drive me back up to the hotel in a golf cart and carry me up the steps.
Sounds pretty nice.
Yeah. Only had one rough spot.
I reached out and enclosed one of her hands, but her eyes remained closed.
What was that?
Well, like I said, they'd drive me home most nights, but they warned me that I needed to be careful walking home that late because there were a few bad characters around.
I squeezed the hand. What happened?
Oh, they had a wedding at the restaurant, so I stumbled up the beach on my own. Some guy got fresh, and I told him to buzz off, but he got physical.
The eyes opened again, and she pulled her hand away as she slumped back into the bench seat.
I told you how thick those beer bottles were, didn't I? She shrugged. Turns out he was the police chief's nephew.
I nodded, and then waited a permissible amount of time before bringing the subject up.
I'll ask again, how are you feeling?
I figure I'm just a hair's width away from having syndrome attached to the end of my name.
Her eyes came back to me, and she cocked her head.
Now, huh?
Now what?
We're going to have this conversation now?
I shrugged, thinking about the actions that had led us to the now. A very bad man, a knife, revenge, an abortion she may or may not know that I was aware of, her inability to ever have children, and a tsunami load of water under the bridge.
Why not?
Her voice took on an authoritarian tone as it had with Lucian. Question.
Yes, ma'am?
Tell me Tomas Bidarte is dead as Kelsey's nuts.
A very bad man.
I reached in the inside pocket of my sheepskin coat and tossed a long horn-handled switchblade knife that I'd been carrying for months with a clatter onto the table between the plates and us.
The knife.
She looked at it for a moment and then picked it up, sliding back the safety and pushing the button, the 8-inch blade slapping open with a deadly snick.
Tell me he's dead.
Revenge.
I said nothing. She put a fingertip at the point, something she was wont to do in any circumstance.
If this is when we're going to have this conversation, you're going to have to do more in holding up your end.
He's gone.
Gone as into the hereafter, and buried by you and Henry in a shallow grave for a coyote buffet, and then carried away in tiny ant-like bites, or simply gone?
Simply gone.
She stared at me, incredulous. Henry Standing Bear couldn't find him?
No.
She smiled and shook her head. There's no way I missed that son of a bitch with that many rounds.
No.
She looked back out the window and set her jaw. Maybe he is a ghost. She took a deep breath, and the eyes returned to mine. So, where do you think he is?
Far. Far from here.
I waited a moment before adding, isn't that where you'd be?
She laughed a laugh with no joy in it. I'd like one more shot at him.
Personally, I hope that never happens.
She sat forward and placed her hands between her knees, her voice suddenly low.
The doc says I can't have kids. Not that I was looking to have any, anyway.
She stared at the leftovers on Lucian's plate.
I've got four brothers, so it's not like the Moretti name is at stake.
Her face came up, and her eyes were washed with salt water.
I just would have liked to have a say in the thing, you know?
I slid out and moved around the table to sit beside her.
I know.
She wiped her eyes and laughed.
So much for hearth and home, huh? I gently placed an arm over her shoulders and pulled her into me, where she pushed the lapel of my jacket away and stuffed her nose into my chest. And we stayed like that for a long time, her muffled voice finally rising up to my ears. "You smell good."
"That's because I smell like you." She laughed. "You could always adopt."
She laughed again, thank God, and then snorted and hiccuped as she tried to stop, even going so far as to playfully pound my chest with a fist.
"Heck, seems like you adopted me years ago."
She pulled me in closer, and we stayed like that, but nothing more was said about the very bad man, the knife, revenge, her inability to ever have children, the tsunami load of water under the bridge, or the abortion I was now sure she thought I knew nothing about. She nudged the blue plastic bag at her feet as I pulled from the parking lot. "Tell me again why we went to Kmart." I glanced down at the bundle I'd put on the floor in front of her seat as she held out her wrist for Dog to lick. "I needed a chess set to distract Lucian so that he stops driving me crazy, and I can't count on you because he might take you up on one of your offers. To coin one of your phrases, a dime's worth of me and a Fresca would kill him." She slid the files from the center console and began perusing them. I cocked my head to one side. "He'd die happy." She propped her boots up under my dash, and I felt a surge in my heart at having her there. "So what are we working on?" I told her about Gerald Holman, the missing women, and about the sheriff of Campbell County not being particularly informed about the situation, resulting in a predictable summation. "Fuck me." She thought about it. "What's the Clod Case replacement investigator's name?"
"Did you just call it Clod Case?"
She brushed my question away with a flap of the dog wrist. "A Philadelphianism."
"Inspector Richard Harvey. What's he like?"
I lowered my voice.
"A dick."
She seemed preoccupied by the files. "A what?"
"A dick."
Her eyes widened in mock horror as she turned to look at me. "Oh my, Sheriff. Did you just call someone a dick?" She placed her chin on her palm. "A dick," she marveled, pretending to adjust a pair of make-believe glasses. "A dick, by your reserved standards, means he is some kind of colossal prick of proportions unlike we've ever encountered." I shrugged and drove, trying to keep from smiling. She glanced through the windshield and postulated in a pseudo-scientific voice like some film you watched on a projector in high school. "Perhaps at one time he was a normal cock, but through contact with radioactive material in the deserts of New Mexico..."
"One of those blue line guys."
Her hands flew up and out, measuring. "He grew to colossal magnitudes of dickdom." Dog barked, and